continuing our study of Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad, the sacred conversation between Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Chapter 5, which is called Karma Sannyas Yoga, the path of renunciation of action. So as before, I'll read the verse, and then we'll read it, then we'll read together, and then I'll read the translation. We'll go through. Actually, chapter 5 is quite short, only 29 verses in chapter 5. So. Arjuna uvacha sanyasam karmanam krishna purna yogam cha sangshasi yachcheya iteyorekam tanme bruhi sunischitam. Arjuna uvacha sanyasam karmanam krishna purna yogam cha sangshasi yachcheya iteyorekam tanme bruhi sunischitam. Arjun said, O Krishna, you speak of renunciation of actions, and then again you speak of the path of selfless action. Therefore, please tell me clearly, which is superior? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nirshreyasa Karav Ubhu Tayastu Karma Sanyasat Karma Yoga Vishishyate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreyasa Karavubaho Tayastu Karma Sanyasa Karma Yoga Vishishyate. The Supreme Lord said, both renunciation of action and the path of selfless action bring great benefit. Yet of the two, know the way of selfless action is superior. Gyeya sa nitya sanyasi yona dvesti na kankshati nidvando hi mahabaho sukham bandhat pramuchate. Gyeya sa nitya sanyasi yona dvesti na kankshati nidvando hi mahabaho sukham bandhat pramuchate. O mighty armed Arjuna, know that one who is free from attraction and aversion is truly renounced. Though performing action, for one who is free from duality, easily attains liberation from bondage. Shankya yoga pratyag bala pravadanti napandita ekamapi ashtita samyag ubhayo bindate phalam. Sankhya yoga pratyag bala pravadanti na pandita ekama pashtita samyag ubhayo bindate phalam. The path of renunciation, Sankhya yoga, and the path of selfless action, Karma yoga, are considered separate paths by the unwise, but not by the learned. One who perfectly follows either of these paths will achieve the result of both. Yat sankhyai prapyate stanam tad yoge rapigamyate ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha japasyati sa pasyati. Yat sankhyai prapyate stanam tad yoge rapigamyate ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha japasyati japasyati. The state achieved by the renunciation of action is also achieved by the performance of selfless action. One who sees these two paths to be one and the same actually sees. Sanyasastu mahabaho dukkam aptum ayogata yoga jukto munir brahma nachiren dadigachyati. Sanyasastu mahabaho sukkam aptum ayogata yoga yukta muni brahma natirendadigatsati. O mighty hero, without selfless action, mere renunciation of action is the cause of sorrow. But the wise man who engages in selfless action swiftly attains to the absolute. Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vidyatatma jitendriyai sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvanapi nalipyate. Yoga Yukta Vishuddhatma Vijitatma Jitendriya Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma Kurvanapi Nalipyate. The clean-hearted person thus engaged in yoga controls his mind and senses, becoming filled with affection and compassion for all beings. Although fully active, he is never implicated by any action. Naiva kinchit karomiti juktamanyeta tatvavit pasyan srinvan sprishan jigran asnan gachan swapan swasan. Naiva kinchit karomiti juktamanyeta tatvavit pasyan srinvan sprishan jigran asan gachan swapan swasan. Pralapam visrijan grinnam unmisan nimisan api indriyan indriyateshu vartanta iti darayan. Pralapam visrijan grinnam unmisam nimisan api indriyan indriyateshu vartanta iti darayan. The realized karma yogi performs the activities of seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving, sleeping, breathing, speaking, evacuating, grasping objects, blinking the eyes, and so on. And he understands, my sense organs, eyes, ears, skin, nose, and tongue, function in relation to their respective objects of form, sound, touch, smell, and taste. Thus he considers, I do not perform any action at all. Brahmana adhyaya karmani sangam chakta karotiya lipyatena sapapena padmapatram ivambasa. Brahmana adhyaya karmani sangam chakta karotiya lipyatena sapapena padmapatram ivambasa. One who, though living in this world, selflessly offers all his actions to the Supreme Lord, is not polluted by sin, as a lotus leaf remains on the water, yet is untouched by it. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalayar indriyarapi jogina karma kurvanti sangam chaktva chapta vatma suddhaye. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalayar indriyarapi yogina karma kurvanti sangam chakvatama sudhyaye. By giving up attachment, the karma yogis perform action merely through the body, mind, intelligence, and even the senses for self-purification. Jukta karma phalam chaktva shantim apnoti naishtikem. Ayukta karma karena phale shakto nibadhyate. Jukta karma phalam chaktva shantim apnoti nishtikam. Ayukta kama karena phale sakto nibadhyate. Giving up attachment to the fruits of his actions, the materially unmotivated nishkam karma yogi attains constant peace or liberation from actions and reactions. But the fruitive worker, sakam karmi, is attached to the fruits of his actions, and he becomes implicated by his endeavors. Sarva karma nimanasa sanyasyaste sukambasi navadware pure dehi naiva kurvanna karayan. Sarva karma nimanasa sanyasyaste sukambasi navadware pure dehi naiva kurvanna karayan. Mentally renouncing all actions, the sense-controlled embodied living being resides happily within the city of nine gates, neither acting nor causing work for others. The body of nine gates are the two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, mouth, anus, and genitals. Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijate prabhu nakarma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijate prabhu nakarma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. The Lord does not generate anyone's ego of considering themselves the doer, nor their actions, nor their association with the fruits of their actions. These are all a result of their external nature of ignorance since time immemorial. Nadate kaschachid papam nachaiva sukritam vibhu agyena vavritam jnanam tenamuyanti janatva. Nadate kaschachid papam nachaiva sukritam vibhu agyena vavritam jnanam. The Supreme Lord accepts neither the sin nor the piety of anyone. The living beings fall into illusion because their knowledge is covered by ignorance. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nasitam atmana tesham adittavav jnanam prakashayati tatparam. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nasitam atmanah tesham aditya vajjnanam prakashyati tatparam. For persons whose divine knowledge is awakened, their ignorance is destroyed, and their wisdom, like the shining sun, reveals the supreme reality. Tad buddhayas tat atmanastam nishtastat parayanat aha gachanti apunav vritam vritim jnana nirudutta kalmasa tad buddhayas tad atmanas tad nishtastat parayana gachanti apunav vritim jnana nirudutta kalmasa. Those who is illusioned has been completely dispelled by knowledge, always think of me, the Supreme Lord. I am their meditation, and they abide in me alone, hearing and singing my unending glories in pure devotion. Thus, they are liberated from the mundane. Vidya vidaya sampane brahmane gavihastini shunichaiva sopake cha pandita samadarshina. Vidya vinaya sampane brahmane gavihastini shunichaiva svapakecha pandita samadarshina. The enlightened souls see transcendence within all living beings. Whether the humble and learned Brahman, the cow, the elephant, the dog, or the dog eater, therefore they are to be known as pandit, men of true wisdom. Very famous for us, this verse. Ihaiva tairajita sargo yesham samye stitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmad brahmanite stitaha. Ihaiva tairajita sargo yesham samye stitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmad brahmanite stitaha. Those whose minds are equiposed in Brahma have conquered the cycle of birth and death while living within this world. By their perfect spiritual equanimity, they are always situated in transcendence. Na prahardishyat priyan prapya, no dvijet prapya cha priyam, stira buddhir samudho, brahmavid brahmani stita. Na prahardishyat priyam prapya, no dvijet prapya cha priyam, stira buddhir samudho, brahmavid brahmani stita. Absorbed in transcendence, endowed with steady intelligence, and free from the delusion of thinking of the body and associated objects as me and mine, the knower of the Absolute is neither happy when pleasant things come his way, nor sad when unpleasant things come his way. Bhayas prishesh vasaktatma vindatatmaniyat sukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukam akasham ashnute. Bhayas prishesh vasaktatma vindatatmaniyat sukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukam ashaktam ashnute. Detaching his mind from external pleasures Such a knower of the absolute truth tastes the inner joy of self-realization. Then, absorbing himself in meditation on the absolute, he experiences inexhaustible bliss. Yehi samsparsaja bhogha dukkayonaya evate adyantavanta kunteya nateshu ramate buddha. Yehi samsparsaja bhogha dukkayonaya evate adyantavanta kunteya nateshu ramate buddha. O son of Kunti, the pleasures that arise from the contact of the senses with their objects are the cause of unhappiness, as they are transient. The wise never delight in such pleasures. Shaknoti haivaya shodham praksharira vimokshanat kama krodha bhavam vegan sajukta sasukhi naraha. Saknoti haivaya shodham praksharira vimokshanat kama krodha bhavam vegan sayukta sasukhi naraha. Know that one who before leaving this body utilizes the opportunity of this life to check the impulses of desire and anger, he is a yogi who knows true happiness. Yontashukanta nataramas tatanta jyotirevaya sayogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhuta digachyati. Janta sukanta ramas tatanta yogirevaya sayogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhuta digachyati. Such a yogi sees the self within and delights in the bliss of the self within. Attaining the transcendental state, he attains liberation from matter, and enters into the abode of Brahma. Labante brahma nirvanam vrishaya kina kalmasa chinna dvaivda jatatmana sarvabhuta hiterata. Labante brahma nirvanam vrishaya kina kalmasa chinna dvaivda jatatmana sarvabhuta hiterata. Sinless, free from doubt, self-controlled and dedicated to the welfare of all living beings, the seers of truth attain such liberation. Kama krodha vimuktanam jatinam jatachetasam abhito brahma nirvanam vartate viditatmananam. Kama krodha vimuktanam jatinam jatachetasam abhito brahma nirvanam bhartate vijitatmanam. Persons of the renounced order who have controlled their thoughts, who are free from desire and anger, and who have achieved knowledge of the nature of the soul, are liberated whether they live or die. Sparshan kritva bahir bahayam chakshus chayvantare bruvo pranapano samo kritva nasabhyan tara charino sparshan kritva bhayam chakshus chayvantare bruvo prapapano samo kritva nasabhyan tara charino jatendriyo mano buddhir muni moksha parayana vigate achcha baya krodha yashada mukta eva saha jatendriya mano buddhir muni moksha parayana vigate achcha baya krodha yashada mukta eva saha. Expelling from the mind all the external sense objects of sound, touch, form, taste and smell, centering the concentration and establishing the incoming and outgoing breath, subjugating the senses, mind and intelligence, dedicating himself to liberation, his desire, fear and anger gone, such a sage is ever liberated. Voktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richyati. Voktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richyati. I am the enjoyer and objective of the sacrifices performed by persons of action and of the austerities performed by persons of knowledge. I am Narayan, the indwelling monitor of all planes of life, the worshipable Supreme Personality who awards liberation. I am Krishna, the well-wisher of all and the dear friend of the devotees. One who knows me thus attains the bliss of knowing his own original divine identity. Iti Sri Mahabharate Satta Sahasrayam Samhittayam Vaishashikyam Bhishma Parvani Srimad Bhagavad Gita Shupanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Sri Krishna Arjuna Sambade Karma Sanyasa Yoga Nama Prachamodayaha. End of the chapter 5, The Path of Renunciation of Action. From the conversation of Sri Krishna and Arjuna in Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad, the yoga scripture of transcendental knowledge in the Bhishma Parva of Sri Mahabharata, the holy scripture revealed by Srila Vyasadeva in 100,000 verses. So, there we are. Short chapter, but an important chapter. So first of all, Krishna explains to Arjuna that karma yoga and karma sannyas, they both are very beneficial. But of the two, nishkarma karma yoga is superior. That means selfless action performed for the satisfaction of Lord Krishna. That is more beneficial to the soul than renouncing action. Then he explains that if you are neither attached or repelled or disgusted by the objects of the senses and the fruits of their actions, if you are steady and free from the dualities of the world, then you are said to be a real karma sannyasin. So not to be attached to the fruits of action and not to be repulsed by the fruits of action, but to be equal in both. That is real, that is actually real sannyas, Krishna is telling here. Then one who is established in this consciousness, then they become liberated from the bonds of the material world and the reactions or the reactions to all activity, although they continue to perform activity in this world, because their consciousness is pure, and they are detached from the fruits of their action, and they dedicate all of their actions to the satisfaction of Lord Krishna, then they are free from the bondage accruing from action. Guru Maharaj has explained that everything is existing within consciousness. So, consciousness is the most fundamental element. The difference between material and spiritual is also a matter of consciousness. Material consciousness means exploitation or renunciation, actually. Both are the same, just different sides of the same coin. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's written, Bhukti Mukti Spriha. Pisachya means like a ghost or a evil spirit or something like that. Pisachya, then he calls bhukti and mukti. Bhukti means sense enjoyment or exploitation, and mukti means renunciation. He says both are ghosts or wicked spirits, you can say. He said, and as long as these two ghosts, witches, as long as they live in your heart, Krishna Bhakti will not like to live there. So first rid yourself of both the idea of bhukti and mukti. Both are reactionary and both are artificial actually for the soul. We understand that exploitation is filthy because it is reactionary. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So then someone will think, then if I only do good, then only good will happen to me. Of course, we see that that's not always true. Somebody wrote a book once, why bad things happen to good people. So it's not always the truth that if you try to do good, because it's relative. What may be good for me may be bad for you. It's relative. So in the political world, while they're trying to find a way to govern the society, usually their conclusion is the greatest good for the greatest number. That's what we're aiming for, to do the greatest good for the greatest number. But that presupposes that some minority must suffer as a result. Because they're not saying the greatest good for everyone, but the greatest good for the greatest number. That means some minority must suffer as a result of that. And that's always the way in this material world, because this material world is a dog-eat-dog world. Jivo devasya jivanam. One living entity is food for another living entity. So everybody trying to be the biggest dog on the block, isn't it? And the big dog eats the little dog. So nobody wants to end up in a can of dog meat. So they want to be, I want to be the biggest dog and you know, establish myself there. But this is not a dignified or civilized way to live. It is not a proper way for a gentleman or a gentlewoman to live. So what's the alternative? We cannot live without exploitation. That's the very nature of this world. You must kill to live. Even if it's only a carrot you kill. But a carrot has life, and a carrot's life is also valuable, isn't it? Okay, it's not the same as a cow's life. Any intelligent person will understand that. Sometimes people who are against vegetarianism, that's what they argue. Well, a carrot's alive as well, man. And then who's to say that a carrot doesn't feel as much pain as a cow feels pain? Or, you know, so what's the difference? But it's a silly argument. Because if a carrot's even aware of its own existence, and maybe it feels some pain when we pluck it from the ground, we don't know. But we do know that a cow has a mental system, it has senses, and it has relationships with its children and so on. So we know it's very similar to us in many ways. And so, you know, with a central nervous system, we can understand what kind of pain a cow undergoes when it's being slaughtered. And not only that, they're highly intelligent creatures. When I was a young boy, my uncle, who was a dairy farmer, and I used to go with him sometimes to the cattle market to buy cows for his farm. And I saw, as a young child, I saw this, that the cows that he was buying and other farmers were buying to go to the dairy, they would go with not much difficulty into the lorry or whatever to go back to the farm. But those that were being bought to go to the slaughterhouse, they would not go. They sensed what was their fate, and they would cry and they would scream, and tears would come from their eyes, and they would fight not to go into that van, that lorry, and they would have to be beaten with sticks to make them go in there. So that is a very heartbreaking thing to see, especially for a young boy. Very difficult to, you know, comprehend such things. So we cannot avoid exploitation in this material world, but we should at least make that minimal. So at least we should cause as little suffering to others as possible as we go in the world. But better than that, of course, that necessitates that we will be strictly vegetarian. We will not cause suffering to other living beings just so that we can eat them. That's a very barbaric way to live. But more than just being a vegetarian, whatever we take, we should first consecrate that by offering it to the Lord. Then, when it is offered to the Lord, and that doesn't mean necessarily you have to make some formal offering, but with your heart, you are asking the Lord to accept whatever it is you're eating. If you can make some altar in your home and offer what you eat to the Lord before eating, that's very good. But sometimes if you're out and about, it may not always be practical to do that. But in your heart you can offer to the Lord. And then when you take that as his remnants, that becomes prasadam. And Mahaprasadam not only benefits you, it benefits all of those that have gone into that. So all of the carrots, the potatoes, the rice, whatever it may be, their life has now become consecrated to Lord Krishna. They become benefited. If you take the milk of the cow, even if that cow has been... We know the dairy industry is very bad. They do not treat their cattle nicely. Unless you go, you know, to Bhaktivedanta Manor, there they treat their cows very nicely. And they keep them for their whole life and look after them. But every dairy, not like that. Even and once the cow is finished giving milk, they send her to the slaughterhouse. Thank you very much, now you can go to the slaughterhouse. And not only that, they rip their baby away from them before they, you know, so the baby can't even suckle from their mother. These are very bad things. Very horrible. But if you take that milk from those cows and you offer to Lord Krishna, then those cows will be benefited by that. They'll be immensely benefited by that. Better than boycotting is to offer to Krishna. Then they will get more benefit. Anyhow, so when we take Krishna prasadam, then we are no longer implicated by karma. That is not our reason for offering to Krishna. Because Krishna himself has told us, who offers me, in this very book, Bhagavad Gita, who offers me with love and affection a fruit, a flower, water, or a leaf, I'll accept that. So we offer to Krishna because we want Krishna to accept our offering. We don't want, it's not that we want Krishna to become our karma negating machine. You know, that whatever we do, we can do it without worrying because Krishna will take the reaction for that. He's our machine for doing that. No, not that. But rather it is to increase our love and affection for Krishna. That everything we do as an offering to him. Then everything you do will actually be beneficial for your spiritual life. So, and this is the point. So, the materialists, their consciousness is that whatever I do and whatever comes in front of me, my vision is this: how can I use that for my benefit? If I can utilize that for my own benefit, or the benefit of my family, or the benefit of my society, or the benefit of my clan, or whatever it may be, then I accept it. And if I think there's no benefit in that, then I reject it. And not only things, but people also. The materialistic person thinks, if I enter into a relationship with this person, how will that benefit me? Will I profit from that or not? And if I think there's some profit in that, then I endeavor to make some relationship with that person. Whatever that may be. Even if that just means like friendship or something like that. But we are not thinking in selflessly, we are thinking selfishly. And that's material vision. And spiritual vision, just the opposite of that. Whatever comes in front of me, whoever comes in front of me, how can I engage that or that person in the service of my Lord? Whatever may come to me, can I use this in the service of my Lord? And always the answer will be yes if you have proper vision. And we can enter into every relationship by connecting that with Krishna. Then that will be perfect. That relationship will become perfect. So you see, the things may be the same. Driving your car, you can drive your car to the nightclub or to the pub, or you can drive your car to the temple and come and listen to the Bhagavad Gita class. Same activity, right? Driving a car, same machine, a metal machine. So someone will say, "Oh, that's a material thing." But if it's used for a spiritual purpose, then it becomes spiritualized. It becomes spiritual. And similarly, our consciousness becomes transformed from material to spiritual by its by its utility. Therefore, we go back to our first proposal, which is that everything is existing within consciousness. So it's consciousness which makes something material or spiritual, not the thing itself. It's not that because it's made of wood or iron or steel or glass or flesh or bones or whatever, then therefore it's material and the spirit is something else indefinable and spiritual things are indefinable. No. Everything, when it is in connection with Krishna, when it has Krishna as the center and the object, then that thing is spiritual. That is the difference between the mundane world and Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means the plane where everything, every atom, is 100% dedicated to the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. So, by practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga, that means doing all of our activities and dedicating them for the satisfaction of the Lord, then those things become spiritualized. And not only do they become, do you become free from the reactions of those activities, they actually become beneficial to you just by changing your consciousness. So what you will do, somewhat, actually last year, when I was at the same festival, Veda Life Festival, with one young man, he asked me this question. You remember, you see, in the Ukraine, they used to be part of the Soviet Union at one time. So that all these young men and women, they were all brought up on, you know, communist philosophy. So they were taught to think that to have more than your neighbor is like not a sin, because they didn't believe in God. They were taught not to believe in God, but was wrong, that everyone should have the same. The only problem is, of course, in communist countries, that some people are a little bit more equal than others, aren't they? So, but anyhow, that was that. So he asked me, is it bad if I have more wealth than my neighbor? And I said, no, it's not bad or good. To have more wealth or less wealth, it doesn't matter if you have more or less. That isn't good or bad in itself. What is good or bad is what you do with your wealth. How you utilize your wealth, that's what makes it good or bad. So that's the same with everything. Whatever we have, first of all, we should understand that whatever we have is only a gracious loan from the Lord. Our wealth, our our home, our car, or whatever it may be, they're only facilities which have been loaned to us by the Lord. And wealth is the same thing. So how will we utilize that? As much as we utilize that for selfish enjoyment, that much it will be reactionary and sinful. And as much as we are able to utilize that in the service of the Lord and his devotees, that much it will be spiritual. So, of course, we are not all pure devotees of the Lord, and we also have many desires. We cannot pretend otherwise. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, who is addicted to matter, they to that degree they must worship matter. That's not, he's not saying, therefore, you know, you worship Goddess Durga or something like that. But it means by your activity, necessarily you will be engaged in the worship of matter. But we should try to wean ourselves off that as much as possible, because we are material world addicts, and that's why we're here. And this coming to the temple is like coming to, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, the material world addicts anonymous. That's a, my name's Dave Ashish, and I'm a material world addict. It's been, you know, however many days since my last, you know. Now, that's what they do, right? When they go to the, so the first thing is you admit to that you're addicted to this material world. But I understand, just like the alcoholic understands, it's detrimental. It's detrimental to a wholesome life to be addicted to the material world. It's incompatible with my spiritual nature. But what to do? I'm an addict. Then what to do? Then we have to wean ourselves off it, bit by bit. And that happens by replacing it with Krishna-centered things instead. If you love music, then love music which is dedicated to Krishna. If you love art dedicated to Krishna. If you love food which is offered to Krishna. All of these, everything can be utilized for Krishna's service. So it's only a matter of changing its utility. Then those very things will become the cause of your liberation rather than the cause of your bondage. So try to change your consciousness. And that will happen step by step by step. But Guru Maharaj said, practice your hand to give. So even if you're a miser, but practice your hand to give. If you haven't got anything, if you haven't got it in your heart to give something that you consider valuable, give something that you consider to be worthless, but practice your hand to give. Even just some paper, but make it your habit to always give. Then one day, when you haven't got anything worthless to give anymore, your habit now is to give. So you'll have to give something that you consider valuable. And then when that's all used up, and the only thing you have left is yourself, you will have to give yourself to the Lord. And that's what he wanted right from the beginning. So one step at a time, begin by trying to give some energy to Krishna and his devotees. Even a little bit. Even, you know, something very insignificant. It doesn't matter. You see, when people come and they put 10 pence or something, or 50 pence in the box, that's giving, you know? And Hindu people know that. They never come to the temple without bringing something to give. They must do that. Or they must do some service or something. You know, this is like in their nature, their cultural nature. And it is right and proper to do that, because that means that we're practicing our hand to give. And what will become our habit? Habit becomes our second nature. So make your habit to engage in spiritual activity. I always give this example when I'm on Ekadashi, usually, when I'm talking on Ekadashi, of our Bhakti Prasanna Aranya Maharaj in Navadvip. Now he's like 94 years old. And he came to Guru Maharaj, maybe Guru Maharaj's first disciple. Even before Srila Govinda Maharaj, he came to Guru Maharaj. And still, he's still alive today. I don't know how he's still alive today, but he's still alive today. And every Ekadashi, every single Ekadashi, since he came to Guru Maharaj, until today, he fasts nirjal, not even taking any water. And not only that, he begins his fast on the day before Ekadashi, after the sun sets. After the sun sets, he won't take anything until the sun rises on the Dwadashi. And that's his habit. And many times Srila Govinda Maharaj would say to him, Maharaj, you're an old man now. You don't need to follow that anymore. Guru Maharaj told us, before 8 and after 80, not necessary to follow sadachar. That means putting on tilak and shaving the head and wearing the sacred thread and all these. That's sadachar. Before 8, after 80, not necessary. Fasting on Ekadashi, all these things, not necessary. So 94 years old, but he said, when Gurudev would say to him, oh, Maharaj, not necessary to do this anymore, then he would say, yes, I know, Maharaj, but it's my habit. So that's a wonderful thing, right? That's his habit. Not smoking's his habit, or, you know, whatever are bad. When we talk about our habits, they're usually bad habits, right? But that's, you know, if you can say when you're 94 years old, yeah, it's my habit to always fast completely on Ekadashi and spend my time for Krishna Bhajan, you know, completely on, and Krishna Seva on Ekadashi, that's a very good thing. So, if what you practice your whole life, that will become, your nature will become like that. So, you know, Krishna says, whatever your consciousness is at the time of death, that you will attain without fail. So everyone is thinking, oh, how will I remember Krishna at the time of death? In fact, one of the Alwars, Kulashekar Alwar, who is one of the great Vaishnav saints of southern India, he has written that the time of my death comes, all of my body will be in disarray, and my life airs will be all over the place. My mind, where will my mind be, you know, at that time? Then how will I remember your lotus feet? I can remember you now. So take me now, basically, is his prayer, you know. While I'm in full consciousness of you, I can remember you. But at the time of death, I don't know if it'll be possible to remember you. So some readers of the Gita, they think when Krishna says this, it means that at the point of your death, what you are conscious of. And maybe it does mean that. But I think, and many other Vaishnava commentators think, that it means that what your consciousness has been your whole life, that will be the state of consciousness that you attain to at the time of your death. So it's not that you can, you know, just lead a sinful life and then at the last minute, you know, chant Hare Krishna and you'll be on your way. Because you cannot cheat the Lord. It's not possible to cheat Him. One of my friends where I used to work, he's a Christian, and he told me, when we go to church on Sunday, we know that it's wrong to pray for anything for ourselves. So before we go in, we have a little meeting and I'll say, What do you need? You say, well, you know, I need a new car, you know, my daughter's taking her exam. And I say, oh, okay, well, I'm a bit ill this week. So I'll pray for you what you want and you pray for what I want. So we go in and we say, oh Lord, you know, give my friend a new car. And I'm not praying for myself, but knowing that he's going to pray for me. And I said, oh, and does God fall for that? Do you think he falls for that? So not like that. We are not approaching the Lord with that attitude. Rather, we want to remember Krishna, not just for our own salvation, but because we love Krishna. We want to love Krishna. Actually, it is too much to say we love Krishna. That's our goal. But that's what we aspire for, love of Krishna. And love means, by definition, love means sacrifice for the beloved. Not the idea of this world that, you know, I'll scratch your back and you scratch my back and we'll call that love. And as long as we have, you know, we can mutually satisfy one another, we love each other. But as soon as you don't satisfy me anymore or I don't satisfy you, then it's all over, we hate each other forever. Isn't it? That's the way of this world, right? We make a compromise with the other person and we call that love. But love isn't like that. Love is total sacrifice for the beloved. that kind of love. Actually, the nearest thing to that love in this material world is the mother's love for the child. When the mother loves the child, she does, it's instinctive. If she apprehends some kind of danger to the child, if she, it means sacrificing her, she'll throw herself in front of the bus without a second thought if it means to save her baby. She won't even think about it. Instinctively, she'll do that. That's love. You know, if you stop back and you think, oh, you know, he's in front. By the time you've thought it all out, it's too late, isn't it? But mother doesn't think that. So this is pure love, or the nearest thing to pure love, because that also has its limits, right? Even, you know, the Yorkshire Ripper's mother loved him. But, you know, I'm sure there was a limit to that. You know, finally when she thought, okay, that's it, I can't really give my love to, after all the things that he did, the nature of this material world. But generally, that's what we understand to be pure love in this material world. Not for anything, and wanting anything in return. So that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for pure love of God, and Bhagavad Gita teaches that. The beginning of that is Nishkama Karma Yoga, and Prema Bhakti is the end, you can say. Not that there's really an end, but Prema Bhakti is where it is fully blossomed, fully bloomed love of Godhead. There, everything we do is spontaneous for the satisfaction of Krishna. Before love, we have to follow the rules and regulations of the scripture. And be a dutiful man or woman. Do our duty to the God. You know, when you're a Boy Scout, that's what you have to say. Oh, Kayla, I promise to do my duty to God and the Queen. That was what we would say every day, you know, every scout meeting. I promise to do my duty to God and the Queen. So, we should be at least dutiful devotees. Until love is there, we must do our duty. And from duty, love comes from there. That is called Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means where we follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures. They're not superfluous. They have been given by Krishna himself to encourage our loving nature to come out and to manifest. And when that love is manifest fully, that is called Raganuga Bhakti. And that means spontaneous, loving devotion. Then there's no need for rules and regulations, because the heart dictates what is necessary for the satisfaction of Krishna. But now our heart is telling too many wrong things. Or rather, our heart is covered by our ego. So what we think to be our heart is actually our mind and our ego telling us something else. So we can't trust it. Therefore, when one is situated in Raganuga Bhakti, that means they are constantly in connection with the Chaita Guru, or the Guru in the heart. But now, what our mind is our heart. Our mind is covering our heart. And mind's job is accepting and rejecting anything and everything. What comes in front of us, mind says yes, mind says no. Today it says yes, accept it. Tomorrow the same thing, no, reject it. The nature of the mind. Always changing, always fickle, and always leading us into trouble. Krishna says, for one who is not self-controlled, the mind is his worst enemy. But for one who is a Goswami, who has full control over their senses, then the mind is his best friend. But until that time, we have to follow the rules and regulations given by the scripture, but even more than that, we have to follow the direction of a Vaishnava. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekyanti te jnanam jnaninas tatta darshana. In the last chapter, we learned this verse that you have to go to a devotee. As Krishna is telling Arjuna that, Krishna is Arjuna's own guru directly. But he's telling him, to learn the truth, you have to approach my devotee. So that someone would think, well, that's redundant, because Krishna's already there, directly giving him. If Krishna's not there, then we can understand. But no, Krishna likes to distribute himself through his devotee. You know, like when you want to buy a car, you have to go to the authorized dealer, isn't it? If you want that, the genuine article, a new one. Authorized dealer, or whatever it may be. You have to look up who are the authorized dealers. Otherwise, you might get a fake. Or, it can't be guaranteed to be good. So similarly, you have to go to the authorized dealer if you want Krishna. And Krishna himself has said that. You go to my devotee, who is Tattvadarshi, who is himself fully connected with me, who sees the truth, and he'll be able to reveal that truth to you if you have the proper qualification. And what's that qualification? Qualification isn't an academic qualification or anything like that. Three qualifications given in that verse: Pranipat, Pariprashna, and Sevaya. Pranipat means exclusive regard. Yes, I am a material world addict, but I don't want to be an addict anymore. I want to be free of that. And I believe that you are the person who can help me with that. You're the doctor that I need to cure me. And I'm not going to go anywhere else. Not like a spiritual tourist going here, getting a bit from here and a bit from there, and then mixing it all together and making a kichuri, spiritual kichuri. But pranipat means exclusive regard. This is the relationship between guru and disciple. It has to be chaste. Like if you marry, when you're married, that's it. You're together now. You can't go with someone else. That would be, first of all, it would be disrespectful to your partner. And it would show that you're insincere about your relationship with them. So similarly, the relationship with the guru, that's even more than a marriage. When you accept a guru, that the chastity between the disciple and the guru is even more than between man and wife. So that means exclusive regard. But also we are told that there may be more than one guru. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is given a plurality of gurus. So that means we have to recognize the principle of guru. We may see the same guru in different persons. And that means we can trace the same flow of divinity. Wherever that's traceable, there we bow our head. Wherever that line is traceable. And that is not that is not being unchaste. That is actual real chastity. Because to be too much attached to the physical form of the guru means we've missed the point. Because the guru is not a particular body. The guru is the vani which flows through him. Mahaprabhu himself says to Sanatana Goswami, "What's flowing through me to you, Sanatana? I'm not even sure I understand it myself. But it is Krishna directing me." So the inspired side of a Vaishnava, that is the guru. And another example which Guru Maharaj gives in Sri Guru and His Grace, where we are reaching towards the divinity, when we are trying to reach for God, and God extending Himself to us, where they meet, that principle is guru. So the principle of guru is to be researched and understood properly. It is very difficult to understand, actually, the nuances of what and who is guru. It is very not so easy to understand. Guru Maharaj said four tattvas, truths, are not fully understandable by the intellect. That is, nam tattva, dam tattva, shiva tattva, and guru tattva. These four we cannot properly understand completely by the intellect. Only through spiritual receptivity, when that is revealed to us, avaroha panta, when that the knowledge descends from the upper to the lower, then we can have proper understanding of that. We may not even be able to express that intellectually properly. So these are not light subjects. The word guru itself means heavy. And we are the opposite of that. We are lagu. Guru Maharaj says, Guru means heavy like the Himalayas, immovable. That means they're not disturbed by the things of this world. They're not going to tell you, yes, worship Krishna this week, and next week they're going to tell you, well, actually, maybe you should go for, you know, impersonal realization of Brahman, and maybe that's better for you. No, the Guru is immovable. His conception is immovable. He is fixed in the absolute truth. And we are the opposite of that, lagu. Lagu means light. Light means we're flitting here and flitting there all the time. Our mind is taking us here. Today I'm thinking, yes, this bhakti is, it's very good. And tomorrow we're thinking, oh, you know, maybe Buddhism is the thing for me. Or, you know, maybe Sufism or something. That is lagu, you know. And even in our, even when we are convinced about devotion, sometimes we're thinking, yes, 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 everything very good. And then sometimes thinking, oh, I'm not even sure if this is this Krishna business or all that. I'm not even sure about it, really. You know? Lagu.
Sorry, what do those four things mean? The things you said,
Nam Tattva means the holy name. Nam means the holy name. So the holy name means Krishna's name. How it is one with Krishna. How it is fully transcendental, non-different from Krishna. It is difficult to understand. And Dham Tattva means where the Lord appears, like Vrindavan, like Ayodhya, like Mathura, like Mayapur, Navadvip, like the temple. The temple is considered the Dham. How that place is transcendental to the mundane world, that is also difficult to understand. Especially you go to Navadvip, Vrindavan a little more easy to see, there's so many temples and so many holy things there. But in Navadvip, so many bad elements and, you know, fighting and so many things. It's difficult to understand how it is the Lord's abode. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, many people living in the Dham, but they're just floating on the surface. They're not actually living in the Dham proper. So that is not something easy to understand. And Shiva Tattva. Shiva Tattva, very difficult to understand. That means Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva Mahadev, and how he is one with the Lord and at the same time different from the Lord. He is Vaishnavanam Yatam Shambhu, the greatest Vaishnava, that is Lord Shiva. But he is also Bhagavan at the same time. Then how to understand that? It is told that Mahavishnu and Sadashiva, they are the same. And how to understand that? But then there's also Rudra Shiva. And sometimes Rudra, he's fighting with Narayan. They're fighting with one another. And so, you know, then... And sometimes Rudra giving that Shiva, he's giving some benedictions to the Asuras against Krishna. Sometimes it's like that.
That's the thing I explained that Shatta, Rajo and Tamogunas.
Yes.
It's in the one person.
Yes. Lord Shiva, very difficult to understand. Shiva Tattva. So these four things, and that with and Guru Tattva, very difficult to understand. They are not, you know, light subjects. They are heavy subjects. But if we want to progress in spiritual life, first principle is accepting the Guru. Principle of Guru. And that means to understand what is Guru Tattva. As much as we are able to understand that. And because we are not able to connect purely with the Chaita Guru, the Guru within the heart, therefore it is necessary for us to accept Mahanta Guru, and when the Guru appears in the form of a Vaishnava. And Vaishnava, Guru means the inspired side of the Vaishnava. So if somebody says, well, you know, how can he be perfect if he wears glasses or something like that? You know? Or we see sometimes he loses his temper, gets angry, or you know these things. Or sometimes he gets sick. How is that? You know. And then, but it doesn't mean that to be a guru you have to be Superman. You know? But the inspired side of the Vaishnava. But does that mean then that the Vaishnava has an uninspired side? Or, you know, a faulty side? No. When we can see that the Vaishnava person and the Guru Tattva within that person, when we see that in its most wholesome representation, that we will understand that is our Guru. But like I said before, but Guru may come to us in many forms. It is not restricted to one. But Diksha Guru must be one. You cannot have more than one Diksha Guru who gives initiation. But Shiksha Guru may be many. And Shiksha is actually the real thing. Diksha is more or less a formality. But Shiksha, the instruction, that by which we understand the truth, the spiritual truth, that is the most vital thing, the Shiksha. As Guru Maharaj would give the example, like the nose and the breath. Which is more important, the nose or the breath? So, you may have a very beautiful nose, but if you can't breathe through it, it's no good. But even if you lose your nose, if still you can breathe, then you can live. So similarly, that it's always like this, form and substance. Form and substance. And when they come to clash with one another, we must always give preference to the form, the substance rather than the form. Form is what the substance is couched in. The nose is the thing which we use to breathe. So the outward form may not be everything, but it has its utility, and it also has its. We hate the outward form, but only regard the inner substance. No, they both have their place. But if they come to clash, we must always give our proper adherence to the substance. Substance is everything. Where we find the substance, the flow, and that will depend on our sincerity to recognize that. And Guru Maharaj, that example Guru Maharaj uses of that Aurobindo Ghosh. I've given this example before, but we heard it from Guru Maharaj, and it's a very good example. That he was, you know, the leader of the anarchist party in Bengal, and at one time he was arrested when the British were ruling India. He was arrested, and before his trial, he absconded. So the lawyer for the defense, his name was Mr. Nixon. He was a good barrister, and he's trying to find out where is Aurobindo Ghosh. Where is he? Then no one can find him. But he saw in the Amrita Bazaar Patrika, the newspaper, an article written in a pen name which he believed was Aurobindo's writing, and so the editor of the newspaper was called there, and he said, is this your newspaper? And in the examination, yes, this is my newspaper. And he said, then you know who wrote this article? He said, yes, I know who wrote this article. He said, do you know Aurobindo Ghosh? He said, yes, I consider he is one of the greatest men living. I have a great respect for him. Then he said, did he write this article? He said, I will not say. He said, do you know what the consequences are? It is a perjury. You can go to prison if you will not answer truthfully in front of the court. Do you understand that? He said, yes. He said, then I ask you again, did Aurobindo Ghosh write this article? He said, I will not say. Then he said, I rest my case. Here is Mr. Ghosh. But that what Guru Maharaj is saying is that in the writings, although it was written in a pen name, he could understand from the subject matter and the style of the writing, here is Aurobindo in those writings. And this way they are able to trace out where he was. So similarly, through the teachings, we will be able to find Krishna. When the teachings come in a particular way, we will recognize, here is our guru. I recognize my guru in this form, but now my guru left the world. Then, where will I find my guru? I will find my guru in the teachings, where I see those same teachings, and where I see them represented in a most vivid way. There I will recognize, here is my guru. Person, body may be different, person may be different, but teaching is the same. So this is the line, the current, Dibya Vani. It is not restricted to any external consideration. It can flow in any way. In any sampradaya also. It is not restricted to any one institution. Where we see, and Guru Maharaj give another example in science, that they go from one to another, like from Newton to Einstein. So there may be so many in between, but the line of thought goes from Newton to Einstein, because there what they have given is more substantial. So this way, our sampradaya also, Shiksha Guru Sampradaya. Not Diksha Guru Sampradaya. Not just by, like the caste Goswamis, but their bloodline, they say by bloodline. Even Srila Govinda Maharaj, his bloodline is the bloodline of Nityananda Prabhu. His family line is from Nityananda Prabhu. But he never told that, ever. Because he didn't want anybody to accept him on that basis, but on the basis of what was flowing through him from Guru Maharaj. Not just because bloodline may be nothing, isn't it? I may be a high court judge, my son may be a criminal. But if I say, well, you can listen to him because he's my son, that will be foolishness. So that is nothing. Bloodline is nothing. And also, formal line is also nothing. That he was my guru and he was my guru, that means I'm authorized to speak on his behalf. I may be a total rogue. I mean, what I say may be total fabrication. And a perversion of the... But because, 30 years ago I got some beads and a spiritual name from him, that doesn't give me any authority. Shiksha is our line. And that means where the truth is flowing. So we'll have to be attentive to the truth. And we'll also have to be open to accept that wherever we see it. Not to be blinkered by our attachment to form or society or whatever, or the institution or whatever it may be. Therefore Guru Maharaj used to say, I am a form breaker. And that was his nature. If necessary, do away with the form. As long as you can, and if necessary, do away with the nose, as long as you can breathe. If you can, breath is life. So the teaching is our life. The teaching is our line. And where that teaching is not only most represented by the talk, but also represented by the character of the speaker, that is also necessary. Anyone can say anything, but how you live your life, if you live your life according to those teachings, how much what you are saying is one with who you are, then we can understand if that person is qualified or not. We can say so many things. But if when the doors close we're doing the opposite of that, then that not only is that hypocrisy, that's actually deception, a very bad deception. But at the same time, if you see somebody drowning, but you only know how to do the dog paddle, you won't think, oh, I better go to the local swimming pool and take some lessons, then I can go and rescue that person, really. With what I have now, I'll try and rescue, help that person. Otherwise, you know, like, or, you know, a doctor, Srila Govinda Maharaj asked the doctor once, you don't know everything about medicine, do you? He said, no, of course not. He said, but then, should you not treat somebody because you don't have full knowledge of it? With what you have now, you should try to help others. So there, you don't have to be perfect to try to spread Krishna consciousness. Only with what you have, try to be true to that and give what you have. And then it will be helpful to others. We can learn so many things, but if it's only theoretical, then it won't be very helpful. It's not a matter of trying to convince somebody about something. It's about trying to share. Preaching has that kind of connotation, the word preaching, the connotation of, you know, trying to convert others to your way of thinking, isn't it? Something like that. It has a kind of bad connotation. When you think about preachers, think about the guy standing on the street corner with the Bibles. You're all going to burn in hell, you know. At least that's what I think when I think about preachers. So rather, I think, you know, speaking about Krishna consciousness, preaching about Krishna consciousness, is about sharing what has been helpful to me in my life. I want to share that with you. And you can try that too. And you can, you know, maybe you can even benefit more from it than I have. But I can say, sincerely I can say, it's the best thing in my life, the most important thing in my life, and I'm convinced if you take this path also, it will be immense benefit to you in your life. I can say, you know, next year I'll have been practicing Krishna consciousness for 40 years. Then I can say, you know, it's the best thing that's in my life, better than anything else. And I mean, although I'm far from perfect. Everybody who knows me, you know, I don't even have to say that. It goes without saying. But I want to share that with others because it's been beneficial to me. You know, like when you go, if you eat something really nice, you want to say it, share it with, oh, did you try that? Did you try that sabji that he made, she made? Fantastic, you've got to try it. You've really got to try it. So, you know, it's like that. You tried this Krishna consciousness, it's fantastic. You really got to try it. It's not about conversion or anything like that. And so people ask me sometimes, you know, oh, you were a Christian, why did you convert to, you know, Hindu religion or whatever? It's not that. You know, first of all, I wasn't really a very committed Christian anyway. As a child, I was raised as a Christian, but I rejected it in my youth as being nonsense. You know if you don't, you have one life, and if you don't accept Jesus as your savior, you'll burn in hell forever. But I don't want anything to do with that kind of idea. What kind of God is that? You know, okay, maybe we deserve to burn a little bit, but forever? but. Krishna consciousness is not about conversion. It's about awakenment. It doesn't matter what your, you know, nominally your religion is. Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jew, whatever it may be. Prabhupada used to say that's a rubber stamp. That's just a rubber stamp. What is important is understanding who you are and awakening yourself, awakening your inner nature. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. So someone will say it's Hindu religion, but it's not Hindu religion, it's the religion of the soul. And it's the same for everybody. Everyone's soul is eternally the servant of Krishna, whether they know it or not. Whether they call him by that name or not, or by another name, or by no name. It's the nature of the soul. And Krishna consciousness, Vaishnavism, is meant to teach that, and only that. It's wrong to call it an ism. It's not an ism. you know, Judaism, Christianism, Muslimism, or whatever, you know, Hinduism. It's not Vaishnavism. It's not an ism. It's reality. And Krishna consciousness just means waking up to reality. And now we are thinking that this is reality, the bricks, the stone, the glass, the flesh, the blood, all of these things, that this is reality, but it's just a dream, actually. It's just like being in a dream, and now Krishna's devotees, they were coming to wake up, and when you wake up from the dream, maybe we're even reluctant to wake up from the dream, it's a nice dream, or this part of the dream is nice, perhaps. But when you wake up and shake it all off, and you remember, oh, it's just a dream, you know, why was I so involved with all that? It was just a dream. So, you know, everything in this world is like that. It's like a dream, because it's temporary. Here today, gone tomorrow. We are also here today and gone tomorrow, this body. So why we're investing so much energy in trying to make some comfortable arrangement for this body, which in a few years will be, you know, the food of insects, or, you know, the fuel for a fire. This is really foolishness. We have to try and invest our energy in understanding who we are. This is the gift of the human form of life. The animals can't think about that. They're only able to act according to their animal instinct. But life is not meant for that. Life is meant for something more. Life is meant to inquire. Brahma Jignasa. Understand the spirit. Understand what is spirit. We are to understand. And in the human form of life, we have the faculties to be able to do that. A dog can't understand that. A cat, a cow, or any animal, it can't understand what is the nature of the soul. But if, as a human being, we limit our the scope of our life just to being like an animal, then maybe in our next life we'll lose the opportunity and become an animal again. So utilize this human form of life for its proper object. The human form of life gives us the faculty to ask questions. Why is it like this? Why is there suffering? Why is the world like this? Why does the world seem unfair? Why is there so much hatred in the world? All of these things, they're all good questions. And if we look for the answer, maybe we'll think, oh, there's a political solution, or maybe we'll think there's an economic solution, or this solution, or that solution. But finally, all of those things will be frustrated by them. And we'll have to understand that the only way to find the truth is to look within. Look within. It's already there inside you, because it's part of who you are. Your soul, by its very nature, is full of knowledge. Sat Chit Ananda. Sat means it's full of knowledge, and Chit means it's conscious, and Ananda means that it has the capacity to experience bliss, and it, not just transitory pleasure, you know, that starts off as nectar and turns into poison, not that kind of pleasure, or the pleasure of this world, you know, where you get a little relief from the suffering for a few weeks. You know, going on holiday somewhere. Oh, I've got 2 weeks off, and then I have to go back to suffer again in my office or whatever it is. That's not pleasure. That's not happiness. That's just a little relief from the mundane. That's just like when you're really bursting to go to the toilet, when you finally go, the satisfaction, we think, oh, that's blissful. But what is it really, you know? You're just passing some waste. That's what so-called happiness is in this material world. Prabhupada used to call it blowing on a boil. If you have a boil on your body, you can get some relief by blowing on it. But when you stop blowing, it's hurting again. Or like when you have a mosquito bite. And you really give it a good, that's great! But when you stop, now it's bleeding and it's infected and it's worse than it was before. So that's what the pleasure in this material world is. When we're experiencing it, oh, this is great. But afterwards, oh, it's worse than that. Now things are worse than they were before. So not that kind of pleasure. That's not what it means to be Satchit Ananda. Ananda means eternal bliss. When you connect with that current of bliss, we just read, inexhaustible. It doesn't, you know, it's like you don't switch it off. It just comes more till you're overflowing with it. And it increases all the time. It's inconceivable to us. It's not just, you know, it's not 2 weeks in the Bahamas. It's like forever in paradise in ecstasy. Inconceivable. But we're meant for that. Our soul is meant to experience that always. A life of that. So, it's not about trying to find that place. It's about awakening your consciousness within. And when your consciousness is awake to that reality, you'll be able to see yourself. This is Krishna says at the end of this chapter, that those who are situated there, in that plane, they reach the state of Brahman Nirvana. And Brahman Nirvana means delight in the self, joy of the self. They know themselves because they know Krishna. If you know Krishna, then you must know yourself. And who knows Krishna? This also is important in this chapter. Who sees Krishna in all living beings? In the dog, in the dog eater, in the elephant, in the Brahmin, in everyone, living in the heart of everyone. That person is a pundit. Not somebody who can talk about the football. They call them pandits now, don't they? The soccer pundits. Or, you know, the political pundits or whatever. That's not pundit. Pundit means who has samadarshana, who sees everyone on the plane of real equality. Doesn't see the external, sees the internal person. And to see the internal person, you have to be able to see yourself. This is pundit. And this comes through the practice of Nishkarma Karma Yoga, of dedicating everything we do selflessly for the satisfaction of the Lord. It's easy to say, not so easy to do. We have to practice, we have to strive for that. But we have to, first of all, we have to understand what is the proper concept. Before we can have realization, we have to have proper conceptualization. So this is why studying the Bhagavad Gita is so important. Because step by step, Krishna is taking us on a spiritual journey, on the journey of awakenment of our soul. Step by step, the understanding that he's giving to Arjuna is becoming deeper and deeper and deeper. Till finally in the 18th chapter, the culmination of everything. And now we're on 5, so we've got a little way to go. But with each chapter, we are becoming more informed about the reality and how to connect with the reality. So here we'll stop for today, and I can give out our study guides for this chapter. It's not so big today. Only one verse I put in there today to learn. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavihastini Shunni Chaiva Shrupake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. Who sees equal vision, we were just saying. Who sees with that equal vision, he is a pundit. Take one and pass them on. Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad Ki Jai. Jai Bhagavad Gita Study Group Ki Jai. Jai Krishna Arjun Ki Jai. Jai Go Premanande. Hari Haraye Nama Krishna Jadavaya Nama Hari Haraye Nama Krishna Jadavaya Nama.